Now it's time to roll the clock back exactly 50 years to 1974 to the launch of a new show from America which would pull in huge audiences all around the world. I can hear the theme tune now. And you can visualise instantly the little girl falling over in the grass. I am, of course, talking about a TV classic by NBC. Still being shown daily in dozens of countries, Little House on the Prairie lasted for 204 episodes over 9 years, from 1974 to 1983. Playing Ma to Michael Landon's Pa was Karen Grassley, and she's been reflecting with Ashley on the legacy of one of the 1970s most popular TV shows.
Karen, it's lovely to chat to you for Distinct Nostalgia. I know very well that a lot of our fans have been looking forward to hearing from somebody from Little House on the Prairie, because we've been trying for a while now to find one of the actors to speak to, and it's great that you've agreed to do this. We're actually in the 50th anniversary year. It's actually 50 years ago since Little House on the Prairie began, isn't it? And I gather there are lots of events and things happening in America to mark this occasion. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Well, we just had this celebration down in Simi Valley in Southern California, which you may not be aware of, but there's a tremendous amount of video and stills on Facebook, on my Instagram, other people's Instagram, documenting that event, which was fantastic. I mean, it started with a small committee of people in the cast who wanted to get something together for the 50th. And then it spread to the president of the Simi Valley Chamber of Commerce, who said, you know, we really should do something. I mean, it all happened right here. And Simi Valley was just a little rural community when we were shooting there. And now it's a town of 100,000 people. So they have a beautiful community center, and people, well, artists made murals of what the house and barn and various buildings in the town looked like at scale. And then they placed them where they used to be on the ranch. And then little Rachel Greenbush and her husband, Danny, they made these mannequins that looked like the children running down the hill in their poses with the right clothes. I mean, amazing looking. And up on the top of the hill, there was the wagon with Ma and Pa. And I was just charming. So they had all of these things. Then they also had facsimiles of the interior of the sets of Little House and the Mercantile, which had been done with minute detail and scale and props like they were on the set. Because, you know, it's all gone. So it was quite the event, and they sold 18,000 tickets.
Amazing. And what kind of people turn up? Was it people who were of a certain age, you remember it, or was it a mixture of people?
All kinds of people. This show is now in its third generation of audience, because we're on the air every day in, gosh, I don't know how many countries, probably over 50 countries. And here in the United States, some places, it's on 2 and 3 times a day, depending on the channel.
That's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing that it's sustained and it endured so long when you think about it. I mean, can you believe it's 50 years ago?
Yeah. Well, I've done a lot of living since then.
Of course. So what kind of conversations did you have with these people that turned up on the to this event?
You know, I've been so fortunate, Ashley, Since I brought my book out, I have made an effort to go out to some of the fan shows that happen all around the country. And I had not done that. But I had books and I wanted people to read them. So out I went and I found out how much this character has meant to people over the years. And it's been incredibly heartwarming for me. And so I got a tremendous amount of appreciation from people, you know, when I was signing a photo or signing a book for them. People can remember an exact look, not even a line, but a look, and say, oh, I knew exactly what she was feeling then. I mean, it's been very, very heartwarming, really. Very, so much appreciation. It's great for an old dame, you know.
Well, let's go back to the beginning, shall we? And we're talking about the early 1970s. How did it come about and how did you get your role?
They had been looking for Ma for a long time. And they had seen everyone in Hollywood who was of the right age and type. And they didn't feel they had found Ma. I had come out from New York to do an independent movie, and the movie fell through, and I found myself actually broke in Southern California with no prospects. So I was thinking, you know, I'm of an age where I should have a career, not be thinking about where's the next meal, you know. So I thought, well, I'll go back to school and get a real job. And then I got a call to go see about this new show called Little House on the Prairie that Michael Landon was directing. And actually, I was so out of touch with popular culture. You know, I had just come back from England doing Shakespeare. I said, which one of the boys on Bonanza was he? And then I went and met him and the producer, and it happened very quickly after that. I just happened to be exactly what they were looking for. And Mike did a kind of closed circuit interview with me for the network executives in New York, because when he told them he wanted to cast me, they were like, Karen who? Because nobody ever heard of me, you know. And so he did this interview to persuade them that I would be right and could be trusted with the part. And we went to work about 10 days later.
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there.
Look,
we all artists, man. We go, you feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
What time of day was it broadcast? When did it go out back in the early years?
Early evening, what they called the family hour.
Yeah.
So 8 o'clock in the evening.
And was it one of these things that was an instant hit, or did it take time to become successful?
Instant.
Yeah.
Yeah, overnight.
Fantastic. And what? Why do you think that is? Do you think it was because it was literally a bit like the Waltons, I suppose, about a family, and it connected with people? And what do you think it was? Was the success at the time, when it first started?
Well, apparently there was a hunger for this kind of programming, because the Waltons was a huge success already. And when we came on the air, of course, there were a lot of comparisons of the two shows. And I think it's about this connection with family and with community, because the townspeople were very important on Little House and our relationships with them. And I think people just had a longing for those connections in the early 70s.
Yeah, and of course, I suppose the other thing it was doing was a bit like the Waltons was of a particular period. This was obviously further back, but I suppose it was helping people to understand how families would have lived in those periods. We used to have a children's program here called How We Used to Live. And I used to sit there in the late 70s, early 80s. You'd sit there at school cross-legged watching this program. And it was every single series they did was set in a different era. So it might be set in the 1890s or the 1930s or whatever. And it, running through it, it was very much about a family. And so it was a bit of like a soap opera in a way. But the history came out at the same time. The bits of history came out. And I think it helped people, helped us as kids to connect to it, because it wasn't lecturing us, but it was telling us stories in a gentle sort of soap opera kind of way, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah, and of course we were based on these books.
Yes.
Which were always a big success, and there were all kinds of details about life then, and kids making their own fun, and you know, toys, and the work that it took to get a crop out, and, you know, things
absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you have to do a great deal of research then, or were you given a reasonable amount of support, I suppose, in just trying to conjure up what it would have been like to be a mother in that particular period?
Well, as I said, you know, I was cast and I went to work 10 days later. So I didn't have a lot of time for research.
Thrown in the deep end, yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of thrown in the deep end of the pool. but my mother had been a one-room schoolhouse teacher, which this Carolyn had been.
Yeah, of course.
She had lived in a rural part of Idaho and gone to school barefoot. She had sometimes ridden her horse to school. She had told me these stories over the years. So I had that wealth of her experience. And I had her example as both a teacher and a mother of how to be a good mom.
Yeah.
So that was my research. Later on, I was able to read about pioneer women and the various kinds of hardships that they survived and how vital they were to settling this country. You know, one of the fun things I learned was that if the husband died, the wife did not send for a new husband and remarry. But if the wife died, that man was sending for a mail order bride as fast as he could.
Interesting. Obviously the team you had on board, you obviously there's Michael, we'll talk about Michael a little bit, but you had these children who were very important to the series, a bit like they were in the Walton. I mean, the whole Waltons team was all kids, wasn't it, really? How were they when you first met them, and how did you manage to, you know, gain their trust? And because you got, it's very difficult, isn't it, to suddenly become a family that's authentic all in one go. How did that work?
We were lucky because the pilot was a very small cast. It was basically the family, some Native American element, and then for the first week or 10 days, we were all on our own with the crew. So we had a chance to bond, because we were all in a new situation. The girls had never done a series. I had never done a series. And we relied on each other. And we, you know, we were all scrambling to do well. So Mike was very gentle with us and very encouraging of everybody. And that created a good atmosphere for us to find our way. But I just loved it. You know, I loved the whole thing of having three little girls and getting to know them. And then I started to tell them stories from my childhood so that we would bond and they would feel that they knew me better than they did.
How much was, obviously there was the books that it was based on, there's the scripts that you had, but how much were you allowed as actors to sort of input into the characters, to shape the characters the way you wanted them to be?
Well, I was very fortunate in that direction because after the kids went home in the afternoon, Mike and I would still have work to do, and I could approach him and say, look, they have me sitting there in the rocking chair by the fire looking worried. What my mother would do if she was worried about her husband was she would get up and clean every drawer and sweep that floor and scrub it, and he loved it. He loved that I had these experiences. His own mothering in his own life was disastrous. And so he right away drew on my experience with mom and just agreed, let's put it in, let's rewrite it. And we frequently did that, which was very fun.
That's really good. That's really good. It's good that you can do that because I know that these days, certainly people, actors I speak to over here, they often bemoan the fact that it used to be like that. But nowadays, they very rarely are allowed to have any input into anything. It's sort of, it's quick, you know, bang, 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 bang in terms of scripts and off you go to the next thing. And, you know, things have changed quite a lot, haven't they, in terms of the way things are produced compared to what they used to be produced.
Well, you know, also the fact that we had one person as producer, director, star meant that no one had to call the office upstairs to say, could we make this change?
Yes.
Mike was the guy.
Yeah.
So it worked more easily.
You mentioned earlier on about that particular community has grown and become, you've got 100,000 people there now, etc. What was it like back in the day when you first went there?
Well, Simi Valley was very rural. The housing developments were just starting when we started working there. And over the years that we were working there, we began to see more and more houses appear on the hills. And then about 3 or 4 times a year, we would go to distant location in the gold country here in Northern California for the big mountains, the big trees, the big rivers. And then to Tucson, Arizona, for the desert and the old Western town and things like that. So then we would shoot parts of 3 or 4 shows in each of those places, and they could be spliced in to give the show more variety, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Did working in any of those particular locations have particular challenges for you? You know, was there anything in particular that became a bit of a, you know, was there any places you dreaded working for a start at all?
Well, the desert could be very hot.
Yes.
Simi Valley could be very hot. That's desert too.
Yeah.
Even though the ranch where we worked, they sprinkled it so that the grass turned green by the little house, but that was desert. And those summers were intense.
Yeah, of course.
It was just the way it was. Do you know what I mean? It was like, this is it.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
There were shows where there were medical people with buckets of water and ice and cold rags walking around, giving us cold rags to put on the back of our neck, you know.
Really? Yeah. So how long did an episode of A Little House on the Prairie take to film?
7 days. 7 12-hour days.
So that's a long day, isn't it? A long day.
Yeah, but you know, we were shooting film, and it's high quality. It takes longer.
And Ashley's interview with Karen Grassley, who played Caroline, the mum, in Little House on the Prairie, will continue in just a few minutes.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast. We're kicking off a whole new season of Gems from Distinct Nostalgia. As we remember the great TV and films of the past with the people who were there.
It was a comedy about language. It wasn't really a comedy about race or religion or stereotypes. It was a sitcom built on puns and mispronunciation of the English language. And it put Barry back on top, you know, from somebody who had been a star to go in, you know, and being on the Dole. He was now back in front of 18 million viewers every week.
He was a huge TV star for years. Ashley talks to Daniel Ward, the writer of a new book about the intriguing life of Barry Evans. And we're reuniting three of the original cast of Mind Your Language.
Hello, I'm George Camilla and I play Giovanni, the Italian student.
Hello, I'm Françoise Pascal and I play Daniel Favre.
Hello, my name is Pixen Lim. I play Chung Su Li, who was a student in China and great follower of Chairman Mao.
Staying with ITV, we're also remembering the classic late-night sitcom Shelley.
The way he talked about going and signing on was the way everybody wanted to talk about going and signing on. You know, nobody really wants to do it. Everybody's quite grateful to get the money, but they don't want to have to do lots of interviews for jobs that they're overqualified for. And so he said everything that everybody wanted to.
Belinda Sinclair gives us an insight into working with Hal Bennett and Josephine Tewson. And we're back at 165 Eaton Place as we go upstairs, downstairs.
So they were absolutely scrupulous about period detail. On rare occasion, they did get something wrong. They would get hundreds of letters saying they would never have put that up on that particular source or whatever it was. There was painstaking about all of that.
Jacqueline Tong played Daisy in the classic period drama, and she'll be recalling great memories of her legendary co-stars. Veteran actor Melvin Hayes joins us from his home on the Isle of Wight with some great anecdotes from over 70 years in show business.
The Monday morning, we got phone calls saying, don't come to Yorkshire, stay exactly where you are. The rest of it was canned. And they paid us six episodes on all our expenses. And it was voted the worst TV series ever made.
And then we're chatting behind the camera with prolific TV director Royston Mayo, whose credits include This Is Your Life, Opportunity Knocks, Tommy Cooper and Les Dawson.
They did His Life in America and then gave him his book and said, hey, Andrews, this is your life. It's also your show. That was a wonderful line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And George Layton talks candidly about his friend Richard O'Sullivan, as well as his own writing credits.
I wrote 13 Robin's Nests,
yeah,
and a Christmas episode. I mean, I didn't create that series, but I did it with the same passion as if I had done, which got up Tony Britton's nose a bit. You know, I don't think he didn't like me coming with my notes to a part he'd been playing for several years.
Actor Jonathan Kidd looks back over an amazing career, including voicing some iconic TV ads.
I don't know why there was a complaint, but the huge furore made sure that Ferrero Rocher was forever emblazoned, was ever stuck in everybody's head from then on, because everybody was looking for the commercial.
We're also remembering some classics of kids' TV.
Why don't you just switch off your television set and go out and do something less boring instead? Sitting at home, watch TV, turn it off, no good for me, etc., etc. And thank God it was changed for when I was on it. But that's the theme tune that everyone remembers, and that's the theme tune that was sung to me on most buses on the way to school and walking through town for a good couple of years after I finished.
That's Phil Noble, one of the original Liverpool gang, on Why Don't You? To come, we're behind the scenes on The Bill, meeting Wurzel Gummidge's real child star friend, spending time with Zippy and George from Rainbow, and going back to Wentworth with members of the original cast of Prisoner Cell Block H. These new shows and a 200-hour-plus back catalogue are available on Distinct Nostalgia. Search by scrolling up and down in the feed wherever you get your podcasts. And a new season of shows on Distinct Nostalgia.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
I became very famous very quickly.
Very quickly, yeah.
But I didn't understand it because I was never out in public. I was always working. So my father said to me, "How does it feel to be a star?" I said, "It doesn't feel like anything. It just feels like go to work, come home, eat, go to bed."
Yeah.
He said, "You know what? We need to go look at some fancy cars." Took me out looking at cars and test driving them to make me feel more like a star.
And what did it feel like when people came up to you? Did you take to that well? Did you like being recognized and things, or was it tough?
I wasn't out. When I was out, it was rare.
Right.
And yeah. It was someplace fancy where people don't do that so much.
Right, I get you. Yeah, I understand. I suppose that's good in a way, though, isn't it? I suppose because the focus is on the work, on the acting, on that. That's really the most important part about it, isn't it, really?
For me, it was.
Yeah, that's what you want to focus on. Yeah, absolutely. And whether I presumably there was a reason about protection for the kids involved, because you know it's important for them to be able to have a good, reasonably balanced life, isn't it, at that age, because they were all quite young.
Well, of course, they don't have a balanced life if they're working in show business. Let's face it.
Yeah.
And all of them did also go to regular school, so let's say they would have a show that they weren't in.
Yes.
And they would go to their regular school. And at the studio, whenever they weren't rehearsing or shooting, they would go to the trailer and work with their teacher on set. As there were very, very clear rules about children getting their education and their parents putting their money aside and so forth. Not that all parents do that.
The thing I remember about Little House on the Prairie more than anything as a kid, because I was born in 72.
Oh. And
I was quite young when Little House on the Prairie.
You were a baby.
I was. But all I remember about it mainly was the fabulous theme tune. Theme tune I loved. I absolutely loved the theme tune. And of course, the little girl falling over in the grass. That's everything. That's what you remember, really. How was that sort of that sequence that everyone remembers made?
Yeah, that was made in plenty of time.
Yeah,
because it had to go on the beginning of the first show, and I remember I had a backache that day, and the wagon, you know, kind of jostles you and. I was worried that I might not look relaxed, you know, that I might look tense. And I checked with Mike and he said, "No, it's fine." And so they shot that very charming thing with the girls coming running down. And then the twin that fell down, oh, he just loved it. You know, it was like it couldn't have been better if he'd planned it. And then, of course, he wanted to do it again. And she was like, she didn't want to do that again. She was 3 years old. She didn't want to fall down.
So they just went with that shot, did they, in the end? They went to the one that...
I think so. I really don't remember.
Yeah.
It didn't take long. And you know that when it came to recording music for the shows... At the studio, there would be a full orchestra there.
Really?
Amazing. Oh, yeah. And David Rose, the composer, would be there, and the editors, and they would do the music. And if it's not only the titles that had wonderful music. You know, there's wonderful music year after year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, obviously, you did a lot of episodes. I think it was about, 200-odd episodes were made in the end? About 204, something like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Episodes. over 9 years. That's a long time to be doing
eight
it.
Eight for you.
Okay.
Yeah, as I left.
You left. It's a long time to be doing a show. Obviously, you got to know each other very well. The kids, of course, got older as the show went on. But I presumably, in a way, you and the cast and the crew and everybody became a bit of a little family, didn't you, over that period? Your own family, in a way, yeah.
Sure, I call it dysfunctional family.
Just talking about the girls a little bit, obviously you will have seen them develop from being literally little girls into young actors. What was that like to see their growth over that period of time?
Well, as with all children, you know, when they start hitting the hormone years, you get concerned for them. And with these girls in particular, they had been made to be super aware
of
their appearance, you know, in a way that it's not healthy, really. It's not healthy for us actors either, but if you're mature, you can handle it better. So naturally, I was concerned about them, and if they were starting to date, I would be concerned that maybe they were dating somebody a little too old for them, and things like that.
So you became like their second mother, really, in a way.
Not really, because I had no say
about
what they did or where they went or anything like that.
Yeah.
And the mothers were all very different. So each girl had a different experience of what that was like there on the prairie, not only from their roles, but from the way their mothers were raising them. So you'd have to ask them about that.
Have you, presumably you've all kept in touch, have you, over the years?
Not that much, but every once in a while we would be invited somewhere like Laura Ingalls Wilder Museum or someplace like that, and it would give us an opportunity to have a reunion with each other. And that started, I think around the 90s. And it was so fun to see each other, you know. And at that time, a lot of us were still living that are gone now. So it would be great to see Kevin Hagen and Dabs Greer and Dick Bull and Catherine McGregor. It was just wonderful.
Yeah. And what do you think to the way in which those girls, the young girls, have grown up into, you know, the actors and whatever that they are now? How do you feel about how they've achieved?
What I think they've achieved that is so wonderful is a sense of balance in their own lives, happy lives, work that they like and love. Some have families and grandchildren. Some have no children. You know, everyone's an individual. But I think to grow up in that atmosphere with the pressure to perform day in, day out, they have done phenomenally well.
Absolutely. So looking back at those 204 episodes, there were so many of them, over 8 years, as you say, you were doing it and then you left. Which are there any particular episodes that stand out? Any particular ones that you remember very fondly, or ones that were challenging, or, you know, any particular episodes that stand out for you over that time?
A lot of people remember a show called A Matter of Faith and talk to me about that, because Carolyn got an infection in her leg and she was all alone and didn't know what to do. And she was praying and she opened her Bible and it said, "If thy hand offend thee, cut it off." So she thought, "I have to cut my leg off." And she got a butcher knife, and then, of course, the screen blacks out, and it turned out that by trying to cut her leg off, she had passed out, but she had lanced the infection. So she recovered, And a lot of people thought that was just fantastic, that show. And one other one that I really am proud of is one called Olsen versus Olsen, in which the women all got together to strike until the men signed a petition for common property rights. So we all went to Nellie's restaurant and camped out, and the guys were all left to do the women's work. Always really fun.
Fantastic. Yeah, pushing the boundaries at the time. But of course, again, like I said earlier on about the program I used to watch as a kid over here, how we used to live, that was what was great about these programs, about Little House on the Prairie and about the Waltons, was that history came through them, didn't they? You could learn things from these dramas, which I think was brilliant. What was interesting, you just mentioned there about her with her infected leg. Coincidentally, I've literally just come out of hospital having had an infected leg.
Oh dear!
So, I had sepsis a few years ago, and I had a reoccurrence of an infection recently, and my leg was, you know, just burst up with all sorts of things. Didn't hurt or anything, but obviously we had to sort it out. So I had to go in and have intravenous antibiotics and whatever, and then I've been out of hospital and had more antibiotics since then. So yeah, but you know, it just makes you think, doesn't it, that there was a period in time when there were no antibiotics, you couldn't do anything like that, and people had to go to these desperate lengths in order to get rid of infections. You know, quite amazing when you think about it. So yeah, no, I can imagine. I don't remember that particular episode, but I can imagine. I'll have to go and watch it. I can imagine that being quite an amazing. Amazing episode. So what about your relationship with Michael in terms of you had to work very closely with Michael over a long period of time, and you know, was that, you know, when your actors that are working very closely with each other over a long period of time, there can inevitably be tensions, can't there? Am I right in saying that it didn't always go particularly well? Is that right?
Sure. So in particular, the first year, we worked together so beautifully. And as I told you, you know, we would sometimes improvise scenes and rewrite together. And we had these times after the children went home. And that was really precious. But then in season two, it was time to renegotiate my contract, because when I started, I was no one. And now I was co-star of a top 10 show. And I was assured by my agent when I signed the original agreement that if the show succeeded, all of it would be renegotiated. So we approached Mike about renegotiating, and he stonewalled me. And then he punished me, and he made it very unpleasant for me. And this went on off and on for all of season two and part of season three before my contract was settled in my favor.
Yeah.
That was tough.
How did you manage to deal with that? Because you've still got to go on.
It was hard.
You've got to still be professional about it, haven't you? You know what I mean?
Really hard. Yeah.
Because you're working so closely together as well, which is, you know, you can't escape it, can you, at all? You know.
Well, there you are in the bed together, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So did you manage over time, though, to get back a better relationship with each other? Did you forgive each other?
Yes. And it came and went over the next years. You know, your next five and a half, 6 years. It came and went because Mike had his own devils and his own moods and his changes of heart.
Yeah.
So it was... It wasn't like the beginning. But in the end, After the show was over, I was very glad that we had a chance to visit with each other and reminisce. And there was no rancor. There was no feeling of resentment. And as far as I was concerned, I had forgiven him for giving me a hard time. And he was very glad to hear from me. So that was really, really so fortunate because it happened before he was diagnosed.
At the end of the day, it's nice that you reconciled things, but you can't go through a period of working with somebody over such a long time without there being some clash along the way, can you? I think everyone's going to have some kind of issue somewhere along the lines, aren't they, at some
Probably.
Point? Yeah, exactly. So why did you leave then in the end? What was the reason for that?
Well, I didn't have to stay. My contract was up. I didn't have to stay. So I gave them a year's notice that I would not be coming back. And that was fair of me. And then they did a year of Little House, A New Beginning with Melissa and Dean as the main couple. And that show didn't work out. So that was the end then.
Your career didn't end there. You've done quite a lot of things over the years and since then.
Yes, before and after.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. And I suppose the final thing I was going to ask you was, did it change what you were then offered in terms of parts? Did you find yourself typecast a bit by Little House on the Prairie? Sure.
You know, at first, the only thing I got sent were characters that were wearing a bun.
How did you manage to beat that one then? You managed to...
I just didn't take it. You know?
No. You got to fight it, haven't you? Absolutely.
In the theater, you don't run into that so much.
No, absolutely. Karen, it's been lovely to talk to you. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And it's great that the show is still being celebrated 50 years on. It's amazing to hear about those loads of people going to these events and things. Fantastic.
Yeah, just incredible.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you, Karen. That was great. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley.
Ashley was talking there to Karen Grassley, and if you can't get enough of homespun American family motherhood and apple pie, why not search out our interview with Richard Thomas, who played John Boy in The Waltons.
We were all growing up together, and what you say, which is that you detected this real chemistry between us, was absolutely correct. I mean, the love that was expressed on screen was real. And also the frustration and conflict was real, because when you work in a situation with that many actors and you work those schedules, the long form schedule over a period of 9 months, especially for network television where you're doing 20 some episodes a season, you know, you spend more time with those people than you do with your family frequently. And, you know, you're subject to all the ups and downs of temperament that happen on a day-to-day basis in a working environment and in a family environment.
You'll find Richard and more than 250 hours of interviews, reunions, documentaries, quiz shows, panel shows, plus new drama and comedy, simply by scrolling through the Distinct Nostalgia feed wherever you get your podcasts.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.
Distinct Nostalgia is researched by Andrew Edwards and produced by Ashley Byrne. A Made in Manchester production.